Can everyone hear me?
Yeah,
excellent. Singing these songs, and I was starting to reflect that, you know, the age of miracles is still upon us. Because you've got a Scotsman sharing the platform with an Englishman this weekend. Only God could do that, couldn't he? Less said about that, the better. Linda Williams asked me this morning what I was going to speak about, and I said gardening. And that is not entirely untrue, to be perfectly honest. I'm going to speak about mustard seeds. And just in two particular occasions where Jesus talks about mustard seeds. He talks about mustard seeds more than once. But the ones that I want to focus on are the ones when he's talking about faith. And examples of this are found in Matthew chapter 17, verses 20 and 21. When he says this to his disciples, he replied, "Because you have so little faith, truly I tell you, if you have a faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move from here,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." And in Luke 17, verse 6, he replied, "If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it will obey you." I've often wondered when I've read these verses what Jesus was talking about. And in both of them, he's talking about her faith being as small as a mustard seed. And when I've read them, I've had to question the extent of my own faith. Because I've never moved a mountain. Has anybody here ever moved a mountain? No. Has anybody here ever uprooted a mulberry tree? No hands. I've never uprooted a mulberry tree either. I've gotten rid of a fairly large tree in my garden, but I've never uprooted it. The roots are still there. The stump of the root is still there. So if my faith cannot move a mountain, it cannot move a mulberry tree. In comparison, is my faith microscopic? And I'm sure I'm just an ordinary guy. When other people have read these types of verses, maybe they've had the same kind of questions themselves. Or you may be sitting there, you may be thinking to yourself, "Alec, that's not what Jesus is talking about at all. You're just being silly." But bear with me, please. If you read these verses on their own, they can come across as quite discouraging. And again, that strikes me as strange because I've never found Jesus to be discouraging. He's always wanted to encourage those people who are listening to him. There are occasions, yes, where you can almost see him rolling his eyes at his disciples sometimes. And the words, if he has any words of criticism, it's usually directed at the ruling authorities of the day, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who would seek to burden the ordinary man with more than we were equipped for, while they themselves go around living a life of Riley, so to speak, and living a life of luxury. And it's the hypocrisy that Jesus criticises with these. So what are these verses about if they're not criticism and they're not discouraging? Both are very similar. The circumstances are slightly different, and I will go into that. And they have slightly different intentions as well. So looking at Matthew 17, verses 20 and 21, just to put it in context, what had happened here was that Jesus and three of his disciples had gone to up the mountain, the Mount of Transfiguration, as it's commonly called now. And the disciples were left to their own devices. And during this occasion, they've been approached by a man whose son is demon-possessed, and they've asked the disciples to deliver the son from the demon possession. And they couldn't do it. They failed. And remember, these are the same disciples who earlier on Jesus had commissioned to go out and to deliver people and to heal the sick. And he says this in Matthew 10. He says, "Jesus called his disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness." So what was the difference here? Why couldn't they do it? They'd come back from this commission, regaling in the stories of demons being driven out, people being healed. So what was the difference here? Basically, Jesus tells them the problem was unbelief. In the account that we have in Mark, at this very same occasion, Jesus tells them that prayer is needed in this occasion as well. He says this: after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, this kind can only come out by prayer. And some of the text says prayer and fasting. So what did why did it make a difference? And I'm starting to think it's because it didn't involve God in it at all. When you pray and when you fast, you're involving God in something. Was it that they had gone out, seen all these miracles happening, and thought, well, we're great, we can do this? And when they were confronted by this particular situation, they forgot to involve God in it, and it failed. And I'm not sure at this point what part prayer played in their lives, because it's not until later on you read them, and they ask Jesus to teach them how to pray. And was this kind of thing playing on their mind when they asked Jesus, how can we pray? And Jesus goes in what's commonly known as the Lord's Prayer. So what is Jesus saying here when he was comparing the faith to a mustard seed? In this account, we have an immovable object. This demon would not move. And in the comparison, Jesus talks about the faith of mustard seed being compared with a mountain. And objects don't come much bigger than mountains, do they? And in comparison, a mustard seed is virtually invisible, thousands and thousands of times smaller than the immovable mountain. And even today, if you ask someone to move a mountain, they'd maybe scratch their heads. And, well, how can you do it? Well, you can mine it. You can put a great effort in to move in that immovable mountain. You can go and you can use mechanical means. You can even put some explosives into the mix as well. And that will not, in itself, move the mountain. The mountain will still be there. It may have been reduced, but it will still be there. It takes an awful lot of energy and effort and time, and still it's there. But I don't think Jesus was talking about moving mountains, physical mountains. I don't think he wanted us to go around changing the makeup of our landscape. Certainly it would be a tragedy to do that in Scotland. I'm not sure about Wales, to be honest. You know what I mean? And he's saying that faith as small as a mustard seed can move these immovable objects in our lives. The immediate obstacles that are in front of us, that we have faith the size of a mustard seed, that can be used to move these objects that are in our life. And situations in our lives that almost seem impossible to deal with can be dealt with having faith as small as a mustard seed. So moving on to Luke 17 and verse 6. He replied, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it will obey you. Again, Jesus is comparing faith to the size of a mustard seed. Different type of context here. If you read the verses before, he's talking about forgiveness, and that how often do you forgive someone who sins against you? And Jesus basically says you forgive them all the time. And if you look at a mulberry tree, and this is where my ignorance shows out, and if there's anybody who knows anything about gardening or horticulture, you can explain it to me later. But mulberry trees are quite big. Pictures that I've seen of them, they're quite voluminous. I don't know what the expression is for that in horticultural terms. And they've got quite deep and entangled root systems. So I was thinking, was Jesus comparing the mulberry tree to the unforgiveness that's in people's lives sometimes? It can be quite deep and entrenched in people's lives and difficult to deal with. But he's saying, if you've got faith the size of a mustard seed, you can deal with that. And unforgiveness itself can cause various other problems in people's lives. It can cause breakdown in relationship with individuals, and it can put up so many barriers in people's lives. And it needs to be taken out before you can grow. And Jesus talks about it being uprooted. That's completely removing it. Everything that is there, keeping the mulberry tree where it is, being lifted out and put into the sea. And that's what he's talking about in our lives. For the forgiveness needs to be completely uprooted and taken out of our lives. And only then can the freedom be achieved to grow in our lives, basically. Again, he's looking at faith the size of a mulberry seed to remove an obstacle in our lives. Instead of being an external mountain, it's an internal deep-rooted problem that we might have in our lives. So what's the significance of a mustard seed? In both passages, Jesus talks about faith being as small as a mustard seed. Some translations don't have that word small in it. And they just say faith as a grain of mustard seed. And some people argue that that word small takes away some of the message of what Jesus is trying to convey. However, on both occasions, the disciples are asking for an increase in their faith. And in other examples where Jesus talks about mustard seeds, he talks about in the context of parables, having a mustard seed being compared to the kingdom of God, and it's the smallest of the seeds. So they already have that knowledge of mustard seed being small, so I do think the size is important in what Jesus is trying to convey at this point. It's both the size and the nature of the seed that's important. Seeds are durable. They can survive the harshest of conditions. Some of them can survive hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And I think that's an important point that Jesus is trying to make, that our faith should be endurable. And it can survive hardships that are thrown against us. An example is, if you look at the story of Joseph in Genesis, here you have a young man who is living a comparatively easy life. His brothers hate him, and they leave him for dead. They eventually sell him into slavery. As a slave, he's falsely accused of something that he didn't do, and he's thrown in prison. And he's in prison for many, many years. Eventually, you know the story, he's freed. And again, many, many years later, he meets up with his brothers, and he shows complete forgiveness to them. So that's an example there. A man who has had an external mountain in his life, he's been thrown in prison for many, many years, but he's retained his faith, and that faith has gone on, and he's worked in the land of Egypt, and he's produced an amazing, miraculous things in the land of Egypt. And to be later on confronted by his brothers, he shows complete forgiveness. So that faith that he has had, although challenged, has remained. He's overcome obstacles in his life, and he's forgiven those who have caused him lots of hardship. A seed itself is not the end product. Seeds are the source of an end product. They themselves are not what faith is. But within a seed, there is a genetic makeup to produce the finished article, the finished plant. And that finished seed, that finished article, is many times bigger than the seed itself. To do this, a seed needs to be treated properly. And we all know that. We look at the parable of the sower, and we find that the seeds need to be in good soil to grow. And so our faith needs to be in good soil for it to grow as well. We need to treat it properly. We need to cultivate it. And we can see that increase in our lives. And we can see God doing great things in that what might have been a very small seed of faith in Alex, but see God taking it and growing it to be much more than what it was in itself. Has anybody heard of a man called George McMakin? I know Phil Taylor has. Is anybody else? No, brilliant. I can tell you about him then. As a very young man, George McMakin became a Christian at an evangelistic crusade. And the evangelist who was speaking at these events came back into the area that he lived in sometime later. And George wanted all his friends to go and hear this evangelist. He was very keen on it. And he was especially keen on one of his friends to go along. And this friend wanted nothing to do with it. So George very cleverly came up with an idea, and he hired a bus. George couldn't drive, so he asked his friend to drive the bus. And he had tried on many, many occasions to get his friend to come along, but no, he wasn't bothered. But because the opportunity to drive a bus was there, his friend said, yeah, okay, I'll come along. Went along to the crusade, and he stayed in the bus. George continued to speak to him, come on, come. And a couple of occasions he drove the bus, he stayed outside. Eventually he went into the crusade, if it was a tent or a building or church, I'm not quite sure. And he became a Christian. That man's name was Billy Graham. And he went on to have an amazing impact in the world, and still has an amazing impact in the world that we live in today. And George McMakin, although he may have had faith, it was a persistent faith. He didn't give up on asking his friend to come to this evangelistic crusade. He could never have known the impact that Billy Graham was going to make in the world. But his faith was consistent, it was durable, it persisted, and there was a fruit from that was bigger than you could ever imagine. So given the right conditions, faith will grow and it will produce effects in people's lives that you could never really think about would happen in people's lives. The same could be said in if you look in the book of Judges at Gideon. Israel being Israel had turned its back on God, and its enemies would come along and destroy their crops and whatever. And Gideon was in a wine press threshing the wheat, the corn and things like that, hiding from the enemy. And God confronts Gideon. And Gideon at this point had virtually no faith. And he says to God, well, you took us out of Egypt, what are you doing with us now? Nothing, basically. So God showed Gideon a miracle. And Gideon says, okay then, fair enough. But it took two more miracles for Gideon to do what God wanted him to do. He nurtured Gideon's faith, and that faith eventually grew. And Gideon took an army, and only for a couple of hundred by the end of it, and he defeated the enemies of Israel and freed Israel from the enslavement that were in where they found themselves. So again, God uses that small piece of faith, and he allowed it grew, and great things were done through that. So rather than being a criticism of faith, I don't think Jesus is trying to criticize us. He's saying, look, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, it can be used. As long as God is in it, he will use it, and it will be nurtured, and it will create things, and it will achieve things in your life that you would never possibly think possible. These things could be external obstacles in our way. It could be people we come across in our lives. But that faith, as small as a mustard seed, if we give it to God, God will use it and he'll help us to overcome those obstacles. If it's an internal struggle, if we have faith as small as a mustard seed and go to God with it, God will help us to overcome the struggles that are in our lives. That may not be instantaneous. Sometimes you find it is. Sometimes you go to bed and there's a mountain in your life, and you wake up, it's in a molehill. But sometimes it takes a lot of time to chip away at it. And it's the same with the internal struggles. Sometimes we keep them, but just we have to be persistent in going to God, and God will reward us, and we'll see these struggles go in our lives, and he'll help us in our lives. So if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, don't be discouraged, because God will use it, and he can use it for you to touch other people's lives, and the end product will be much greater than the seed that started off with. John.